Welcome back to the Bob Davis Podcasts. Well, I just got back from a very loud restaurant dinner with friends, and I spent the evening yelling at the top of my lungs. And I always do that. It's late at night here in the broadcast bunker, and I'm going to fire up the wood stove because it is, cold again, and we've had some snow in my neck of the woods, and it's time to actually tackle a political story in this podcast. Clinton, Trump, Russia hacks in podcast 673, because it is time to take the story on a little bit and talk about it a little bit in this podcast. Well, I'm pretty excited to be working with a new company called ReliaFund. This is a company that processes payments. It's that simple. So if you're a developer and you develop websites for clients that want to process payments, this is a message for you. If you're a business and you want to process payments more affordably, more efficiently, then listen, this is for you. Now, you can be almost any kind of a business. You can be an artist. You can be a photographer. You can be someone involved in service. You can be a podcaster. ReliaFund will help you get paid, because what they do is they process payments, and they do it very efficiently. They've been doing this for a long time. They've been providing integrated solutions to get payments cleared for more than two decades. If you're developing an e-commerce site you want to talk about, and you want to talk to somebody at ReliaFund, if you're trying to get payments processed, you want to talk to somebody at ReliaFund. First of all, it's reasonable. I've talked to people about what it costs per transaction. They are shocked. They have no long-term contracts. They're secure. They're technology-focused. They have 20 years of experience doing this. So here's what you do. Talk to an actual human being at ReliaFund, 866-243-5040. That's 866-243-5040. Or click on that banner at the top of the Bob Davis Podcast page. Takes you right to the contact page at ReliaFund.com, 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 and you can fill out that form. A real human being, Kevin Hill or Greg Lowry, will get back to you, and you'll understand why I say ReliaFund is really cool. ReliaFund at ReliaFund.com, or you can click on the banner at the top of the page, the BobDavisPodcasts.com. Yeah, sitting by the fire. So I have made some notes because I've had to do some research for this podcast. I could definitely talk this, especially after the dinner I've had, where, you know, we were talking about politics and, you know, getting into some really detailed stuff. And it wasn't on this particular story, but I could definitely, now that I'm all warmed up and my voice is gone, I could definitely do this really without notes, but I wanted to take a little time and go through some reporting on this story in order to try to help podcast listeners to make sense of this and put it in perspective, because no one is doing that. And so some of this I'll probably read, but I'm going to try to talk a lot of it in the whole spirit of the fireplace. And then when I finish the podcast, I'm going to go upstairs and watch Stranger Things. So there's an agenda for this evening's efforts as I make this podcast, whatever time you listen to it. So just understand those are my little caveats, because the Russia-Trump-Clinton hack story is complicated. And it's getting more complicated as every day goes on. And I have come to the conclusion, just by looking at some polls and some other stuff, that when people are asked about this, I don't think people really understand all of the components, the moving parts that are in this story, and what they mean, and what we know and don't know. And so I'm going to try to do that now, because the truth is, we really don't know much about this, even though if you watch YouTube, if you watch a lot of conspiracy videos, if you read the New York Times, if you read the Washington Post, if you read Huffington Post, if you're watching Fox News, CNN, any of that stuff, as I talked about in the previous podcast, which suggested that people are getting tired of political talk and turning away from it. And the reason is, I don't think they know what these people are talking about, because you're constantly being exhorted to believe a certain point of view. I don't need to belabor that, but I wanted to make that statement at the outset of this podcast, because I'm going to talk about this very complex, complicated story that is so hard to figure out where all the edges are and where the moving parts are. So Since the election of 2016, we have been hearing stories about Russian interference with our election, our presidential election. They are confusing. They are misleading, both during the election, before the election, and after the election. They have led to two investigations, at least, by the FBI, a special prosecutor, and a lot of political rancor on both sides of the fence. And people are deeply confused about the details in these cases, because there are three identifiable different cases and different storylines here. And I don't think people understand this. And here's why. So I just did a little research, and we have been treated to – these are three examples of the kind of headlines and reporting that are taking place on this, which are contributing to the confusion, and here's just three. And there are several iterations of these kinds of headlines, and if you read, then you'll see them. If you scan on the internet, you will see them. And if you watch television or YouTube and get your news, you're going to see various iterations of these kinds of headlines. The first one is Russia collusion story is blowing up like the Hindenburg, meaning the assertions that the president was involved in some kind of Russian collusion have now just completely vaporized with the advent of a story that was released by the Washington Post. I'll tell you about that in a second if you don't know about it. I can't imagine that you don't, but here's another headline. New focus on Clinton rocks the Democratic media complex. And this is the idea that all of the people in the media are all Democrats, which many of them are, and they're all in favor of Hillary Clinton, and they hate Trump, and they're trying to take Trump down. And new allegations that say that the Democrats paid for the Russian dossier, which I'll tell you about in a second if you don't know about it, can't imagine that you don't, prove that they're all crazy, and now they don't know what to do because they're confused. And then finally, quote, Trump-Russia scandal is a huge media fail, that somehow this whole thing that the Washington Post wrote about is a giant fail, and they all have egg on their face, and that's that. Now, I have to do this because you need to have a grounding in what actually has happened. Now, this isn't going to be super detailed. It's just kind of a timeline. So if you're expecting me to give you detailed information that proves this wrong or proves that wrong, I'm not going to do that. I'm doing this so that you understand the timeline here and the separation of these different storylines that we've been dealing with. Storylines that various commentators and reporters have taken liberty with to say it means this or means that, as I will show you a little bit in this podcast. So as far as I can tell, the Russian thing started back in 2015. This was when, according to The Guardian, a British newspaper, British intelligence was the first to spot what it called suspicious interactions in late 2015 of suspicious interactions. Those are their words, not mine, between figures, The Guardian's words, between figures connected to Trump and known or suspected Russian agents. Unidentified sources close to UK intelligence was the source for The Guardian story, and those were the sources that were quoted. Also reported in this story is that the intel was passed on to the United States, the Obama administration, as part of a routine exchange of information. So that was the beginning of the so-called Russian story. About a year ago, in October of 2016, David Korn of Mother Jones magazine, certainly no conservative paragon of virtue, although David Korn writes some good stuff occasionally, even though most of the time it's very partisan and it's very not decidedly Republican. Once you know that, you can read him and you can read Mother Jones and you can gain some information from them. So I don't like necessarily Mother Jones, although I have often talked about articles in Mother Jones that I have appreciated. So I'm not going to just slam them because they are not, they're a left-wing quote-unquote left-wing publication, which I don't know. But anyway, David Korn broke the story about a so-called Russian dossier, which alleged a former British intelligence officer had uncovered suspicious interactions between Russia and the Trump campaign. These are their words, David Korn's words, Mother Jones Magazine's words, not mine, okay? The only reason I mention the orientation politically of Mother Jones or of David Korn is because people attacked the Mother Jones Magazine and David Korn for having the temerity to make these allegations and that it was nothing and so forth and so on. Now, this is the dossier that BuzzFeed was able to get hold of and publish in its entirety, which I have put a link up to because I think everybody should read it if you haven't. In late November and December 2016, the U.S. intelligence community investigated a hack of the Democratic National Committee servers. So there's that. Then in early January of 2017, this is after the election, the intelligence community released a joint report on those hacks. So as reported by Wired, the intelligence report detailed a vast Russian intelligence operation that extends from hacking both Democrat and Republican targets to propaganda campaigns to troll-fueled social media disinformation. It reasserts the intelligence community's findings that the Kremlin is behind breaches of the Democratic National Committee, the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee, Hillary Clinton's campaign, and even state election board websites. And the express intention of those operations, the report states, was not only to disrupt the American electoral process, but to elect Donald Trump. Now, that's a final paragraph that's asserted in the Wired story. That's not my assertion. Again, this gives you a timeline for how these stories and different stories emerge, particularly the Hillary Clinton server story, which actually goes back to 2009 and 10. And really 2013 and earlier, an ongoing scandal involving a woman who would become the Democratic presidential candidate, Hillary Clinton, and the now famous email server she used while Secretary of State being hacked. It was later revealed to be a shadowy figure named Guccifer who hacked. Guccifer has been, I don't know whether correctly or incorrectly, but let's just say linked in the media with Russians. Guccifer, supposedly some Eastern European hacker, but nobody really knows who Guccifer is as far as I know. And this became the centerpiece issue of the 2016 presidential race. And you'll find out why I say that later, even over the Trump dossier, even over the Trump grabbing women by the pussies, even over the, you know, the whole question of whether or not Trump was involved with the Russians is the Hillary Clinton email servers being hacked. Why? Because, and this is important, because most people conflate the Trump-Russian hack story with the Trump-Russian hack story. You see what I mean? They conflate it with the Hillary Clinton email hack story. In fact, they are different stories. And I give you the timeline because really the Hillary Clinton hack happened before the other hacks. So on October 25th, just a few days ago in podcast time, the Washington Post broke the story that the now famous Trump dossier story was originally opposition research funded in the beginning by an unknown never Trump Republican who I'm sure eventually will be revealed. When that Republican ended the research, it was shopped to the DNC attorney, and the Clinton campaign and the Democratic National Committee picked up and paid for what became known as the Steele dossier. This is the one published in BuzzFeed. This is the one you should read. So again, we are talking about three storylines here. One, the so-called Russian hack of both political parties, presidential campaigns, as well as social media troll campaigns and misinformation and the potential national security issues that might come up from from that, which is why such an allegation would have to be investigated. Two, the Mother Jones story of the so-called Russian dossier and its implications, if true, on a potential Trump presidency, especially coming in October, just before the U.S. presidential election. Three, Hillary Clinton's email server and hacks by Guccifer, I believe unrelated, I think it's fair to say, to the previous two stories, and whether or not she would be prosecuted for potential security leaks in the case. So those are three different storylines, really three different stories that have been active in this whole controversy. Now, since his election and inauguration, President Trump has not been able to get free of the so-called Russia story. The firing of the FBI director related to it. The resignation and sacking of the former acting attorney general was related to it. The recusal of the new Trump-appointed attorney general, Jeff Sessions, from the Russia investigation is, of course, related to this story. And finally, the appointment of Robert Mueller as special counsel by the deputy attorney general, Rod J. Rosenstein, to oversee the investigation into ties between President Trump's campaign and Russian officials is obviously related to the alleged Russia story. Let's take a break here. Well, we got the fireplace going, and it gets a little intense. I'm taking a little break because I'm actually sweating sitting here in front of this fire, and it reminds me that I should remind you guys that this winter, if you have plumbing or heating problems, especially emergency service, or you're looking at something that you know is going to be an issue in your house or someone you love's house, think Ryan Plumbing and Heating of St. Paul, but also for business, because heating problems develop in business during the winter for various reasons. Think Ryan Plumbing when it comes to keeping all of your systems running right, especially these days at home or your business. When you have plumbing or heating problems, you want reliable service. And that means Ryan Plumbing and Heating in St. Paul, 651-224-4771. In Minneapolis, 612-927-6488. You know the whole story. They go back four generations in Frogtown. Quality replacement and repair of all plumbing, heating, and air conditioning systems, residential and business. They are metro-wide, so they go across the river. They go to the suburbs, too, and they can do a lot for you. And I always push emergency service in winter months because if you're like me, I'm sure you've had pipes burst or you've had issues with heat in the winter and you want to get somebody out right away. Ryan Plumbing and Heating in St. Paul. Again, 651-224-4771. In Minneapolis, 612-927-6488. Online at ryanplumbing.com. So, with the advent of this latest Washington Post revelation, which happened on October 25th, Republicans are shouting from the parapets that this exonerates Trump, that the liberals are stupid for believing this all along. They are screaming that this proves those left-wing fake media types are purveyors of lies and unpatriotic Americans, as well as being idiots because they believe something they shouldn't. And why didn't they know it was nonsense? And it's important to note that none of that is true. And it's one of the things that vexes me about media today, because it's all coming from LifeZet, and it's coming from Breitbart, and it's coming from all these different agencies and paid hacks of the Republican establishment. And I'm going to say this again. I don't know if Russia hacked the DNC servers. I don't know if Russia was behind or involved with or colluded with then-candidate Trump. You don't know either. We still don't know. And as I said, when this whole thing started, I don't know whether the then-president-elect was involved in any collusion before the election or after it with the Russians, and I still don't. And you don't either. None of us know, because none of us have any evidence, yay or nay, on the issue. What we have is an enormous amount of speculation on both sides of the fence, and an enormous amount of people with a vested interest in telling us whatever we want to hear, depending on what flag we fly on our little ship of state out here in the lands beyond the pale. So what I want to do in this podcast is just talk about this latest wrinkle in what is becoming a farce, a ridiculous political farce for a lot of reasons. And some of it is unavoidable, but most of it has to do with the way information percolates in our society in this day and age. First of all, the involvement of any foreign government in a U.S. election, in any election, for, you know, street commissioner, least of all the presidential election, is significant. And it is a foreign policy issue, and therefore it is extremely important. This was why the Obama administration picked it up. Yes, they're partisan, and yes, they were Democrats. And of course, many people in the Obama administration definitely wanted to be succeeded by a Democrat president. I don't think that Obama was particularly thrilled that it would be Hillary Clinton, because I don't think he liked her, really, politically. I know that he had issues with Bill Clinton as well, so I'm not, you know, I don't think that Obama embraced the story with glee, but at the same time, it's significant enough that they should have. So on both sides, for people who are partisan, there's plenty of grist for the mill. Yes, Obama's a Democrat, and yes, I'm sure they wanted Hillary Clinton to win, and I'm sure that there was a lot of pressure on the administration to help her in any way they could, but there is this issue of the potential intervention in a U.S. presidential election by a foreign power, and particularly the Russians. Second, and this is really important when you hear this story about the Washington Post and opposition, something called opposition research. Anybody in politics knows what opposition research is. Opposition research is the mailer that you get on the in your mailbox in Hopkins, Minnesota, on the school board election, that says that the guy that is running for the school board was arrested for a DUI 10 years ago and had a horrible drinking problem. Now, it doesn't tell you that that person has solved that problem, doesn't drink anymore, goes to AA, went to treatment, yada, 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 has three beautiful children. All it says is that this guy's a drunk, okay? They found that out because they had some opposition researchers look the guy's criminal records up, dig any, you know, and did you know that police came to his house three times because of domestic abuse issues? He's a wife beater, that kind of thing. That's opposition research. Now, at the local level, it takes on this mailer form where someone's character is questioned, or their approach to politics is questioned, or that, you know, there's a picture of him as a KKK guy or something like that. But on a national level, it becomes extremely important, because presidential elections are extremely important, and not because the American people care about them, but because the presidency is quite powerful politically and internationally, and, you know, there's a whole bunch of reasons why being the president is important. And people really want to be president. So Hillary Clinton really wanted to be president, and so did Donald Trump. And there were people that really didn't want them to be president. And they hire these people who live in the shadows, who make a handsome sum for conducting this kind of opposition research and pulling dirty tricks to make other opponents look bad. As LBJ was famously heard to remark, you know, my opponent beats his wife. And somebody said, but, you know, Senator, you know, he doesn't. And LBJ said, well, we're going to make the son of a bitch deny it. That's opposition research. And it's the way politics has been practiced in this country for, you know, centuries. And clearly in the case of the Russian dossier, this was sought first by Republicans to stop Trump and then by Democrats in an effort to defeat the future president, right? Now, there's nothing wrong with this. There's nothing particularly illegal about it. And as some have said, that there is stuff that is illegal about colluding with a foreign power. A great example is seen in the Vietnam War documentary that alleges that Richard Nixon spoke to the Tu regime in Vietnam and made some backroom deals. It has been alleged that the Reagan campaign made some backroom deals with the Iranians to get the hostages released as well. So this is nothing new, and it happens all the time. And sometimes it's treasonous and sometimes it isn't, and it's hard to determine one way or the other, sometimes legally, whether it is or it isn't. this is politics, and it's been going on since who chopped down the cherry tree, as well as the allegations, which, by the way, turned out to be true, of Thomas Jefferson's affairs with the beautiful Sally Hemings, who he happened to own at that time as a slave. To the extent that there were illegitimate children, you know, it was interracial, and it has been denied. It was denied then, and to my understanding, it has been denied, you know, vociferously by the Jefferson family. But in fact, it has turned out that they have DNA evidence, which proves that, in fact, Thomas Jefferson did have an affair with Sally Hemings. So this is nothing new. This goes back to the very first elections in U.S. history. So opposition research is part of politics, and it isn't illegal for those of you who believe that this is wrong and it proves that Hillary Clinton's a horrible person and everything else. She was trying to win the election, and so was Donald Trump, and so was Ted Cruz, and so were other Republicans that didn't want Trump to be president. My understanding is that parts of the Russian dossier, which is so damning to Donald Trump potentially, have been debunked, but other parts need to be investigated. And parts of whatever Robert Mueller is doing have little to do with the dossier or even President Trump. The rest is this question of whether or not the Russians did intervene or attempt to intervene to influence the politics in the United States. It's frustrating to me. I have a sheaf of stories right here in my hand. Most of them are not news coverage, but opinion pieces written by advocates or poorly written news stories with editorial opinions thinly disguised as news writing. For example, listen to this quote from a New York Magazine article, which, you know, is supposed to be objective about this whole thing, that says, quote, "Having apparently decided that defending the Trump campaign against charges of collusion is an impossible task, the Republican Party has decided to go on offense." Now, that implies that the charges are true and that the president cannot be defended. Well, that's just not true. You can make an allegation, but that does not make the allegation true, no matter how much hearsay evidence is collected. There's rules of evidence in a courtroom, and you know, so far, very few of this stuff has risen to the level of being actual evidence because it's not sourced and we can't check the sources. So finding out whether a lot of this is true is probably never going to happen. Why would they feel the need to even defend the Trump campaign? So is it true that the Republicans are desperately trying to defend Trump or not? If we don't know what happened, why would defense be necessary at all anyway? Why would it be an impossible task if someone is innocent until proven guilty? So again, that is an example of bias. And here's another one. Quote, "The questions surrounding Trump's collusion are in some sense an outgrowth of the larger question of his corrupt relationship with Russia." Well, it's written in such a way that it's true. The statement is that there is a question about Trump's corrupt relationship with Russia. However, that's an allegation that he even has a relationship or that it's corrupt. Here again, it sounds like a fait accompli when we really don't know because nothing has been proven. Republicans aren't immune from this kind of bias either, with Republican House committees starting investigations into Hillary Clinton's email hacks and FBI Director Comey again. And here is this whole statement that there's some sort of something that happened on the tarmac regarding Hillary Clinton's emails. And here's what happens in polling data. People conflate. They put together the email scandal because it involves a hack and the Russian thing, which involves a hack. And they want to blame it on her and not him. She was the one in collusion. Again, none of that's been proven. It's all nonsense. One of the reasons that I did the podcast that suggests audiences are getting tired of political coverage is exactly this kind of crap, because we're not reporting on new information, or as I like to say, a recitation of the facts. We are simply stating opinions again and again and again. So this is for Democrats, especially, and I think they know that this is true, you Democrats, that the reason Hillary Clinton lost the election wasn't because of the Russian hacks. It's not because of the email servers. And I don't doubt for a moment that election coverage from outlets like RT and YouTube videos from Alex Jones, as well as 100 other unknowns about Clinton's reptilian origins, hurt her, or that the you know, troll posts on Facebook and otherwise heard her, but, you know, a really great candidate could have overcome all of that, and she failed to do one simple thing. And none other than David Corn actually points this out in his most recent piece about the Washington Post story. I think it's because partially she failed to separate her email server hack and the story of the hack from the more important issue of the alleged Russian hack of the DNC servers and the potential of Russian involvement in the U.S. election. She didn't, and nothing had been proven. So she chose that as the centerpiece of her election towards the end instead of telling people what she actually wanted to do. And I also, you know, unlike Bill Clinton, Hillary Clinton was just not a likable character. She's not the kind of person that people wanted to sit down and have a beer with. And she was fighting against this cartoon of a human being in the form of Donald Trump, who just would say anything. So that's what I think about what happened with Hillary Clinton as a presidential candidate. And I think there's a lot of Democrats that believe that she was a terrible candidate. And I think that they're right. Now, I disagree with her politically, but I also disagree with President Trump politically. So it's not a partisan thing to say that. I just think the Democrats had a very weak candidate this time around. Now, if you actually read the dossier, you can see why President Obama's administration and, quite frankly, Hillary Clinton's campaign, as well as Trump, would have been concerned about the veracity of it and why they'd want it investigated. And you can also see why Clinton, looking at it as opposition research, was salivating at the opportunity to use it. Again, some of this report's allegations have been debunked, and I really shouldn't even use that word. Let's just say unproven. In other words, they've been proven false, and others are still being investigated, I assume. And I think that is what Robert Mueller is trying to figure out. Here's the problem, and this is really the issue. These kinds of foreign dossiers and documents never tell the full story, and there are many examples. One of the most famous was the so-called Zimmerman Telegram, which proposed an alliance between Germany and Mexico, among other things, at the time of World War I. British intelligence intercepted the telegram. It was very explosive because it suggested that if the Germans and the Mexicans allied and won, the Germans would give Mexico Texas and California back. So this was a big deal. And this was published in U.S. newspapers, and it became the core of the war cry. The Americans said they uncovered it, and it was kept quiet that that was British intelligence. And remember, at this time, most of the American people did not want to get involved in a foreign war. In fact, that was the clarion call of President Wilson's campaign. I'm going to keep America out of war. I'm going to be a peace president. And yet this thing pulled the United States into the war in Europe between France, Germany, and Britain, and the German allies. So, you know, this was a big, the allies and the German axis, so to speak. So this was a big, big deal. And the Zimmerman telegram, it was never revealed to the United States where it came from. So telegrams and dossiers and things of that nature are not unusual, but they're really potentially dangerous, especially if they're fake. Now, we cannot know whether this so-called dossier is real. And there's a lot of people on YouTube that will tell you why it is and why it isn't. They don't know either. They're just making it up as they go along. But here's the key thing in this story that is so important. The implications of a dossier like this have to be properly investigated. It isn't even really about President Trump, who is perfectly capable of defending himself legally or otherwise. He's perfectly capable of defending himself politically. And he is innocent of any wrongdoing on this until he is proven guilty, until allegations are proven strong enough for indictments to be handed down. And really, we're probably never going to see how true it may or may not have been concerning Trump. Just because we find out the Democrats partially funded this opposition research, again, doesn't prove anything. Doesn't prove it didn't happen, or lessen the intensity of the allegations. If some of them are proven to be true and people are indicted, it's potentially true that the president could be impeached for some kind of collusion because it's treason. This is the reason that Nixon had the plumbers. He wanted to get the information that suggested that he and his campaign had been talking to Chu, trying to undermine LBJ before the election. And so this is serious business if it's proven true. And people at the time when Nixon was potentially about to be impeached. You know, they were defending Nixon the same way that they defend Trump right now. Let these guys defend themselves. We have no business defending them politically because I don't know what happened. I'd like to know what happened, but I don't know what happened. And I don't fault either political party for this kind of thing, especially when it comes to opposition research. I do fault people who are trying to exhort you to have an opinion and to defend or to attack somebody overdoing something that you have no idea and couldn't possibly prove one way or the other through any kind of deductive reasoning, no matter how intelligent or well-trained you were. What's important in this whole story is escaping the attention of the American people. And this is, if Russia did intervene, why? If it wasn't Russia, who was it and why did they intervene? Which it appears to me, until I learn otherwise, that Russia did. They certainly boosted plenty of entries on Facebook and Twitter and so forth. Was it to ensure division and confusion and mistrust of their government on the part of the American electorate and bring an end to a current U.S. foreign policy that was vexing Russian leadership? Did they have enough from their hacks and other operations that they could have blackmailed either candidate, regardless of which became president? Was it to reduce confidence again by us, the American people, in the level of trust of our government and the level of trust that we perhaps deserve to have in our government? Because if it did, then they succeeded, I think. But you can tell me whether this kind of operation, if it was done by the Russian or the Chinese or the American intelligence community or whatever, were successful. And I think they were, and I think that's the real story. Don't forget Ryan Plumbing and Heating in St. Paul for emergency service and to make sure everything is up and running, home or business. In St. Paul, 651-224-4771. In Minneapolis, 612-927-6488. Very quickly, I got to remind you guys about 03D.com. So I have a new arrangement with those guys, and if you are looking for amazing, great motorcycle products and accessories for your bike, which is now probably parked in the garage, and you're just looking at it, wishing that you could ride it, right? Remember 03D.com, because if you are listening to the Bob Davis podcast, you click on that banner, you go there, and you buy something, I will get a little cut. So I'm pretty excited about that. And I think Ciro 3D is great. So it's Ciro3D.com. Click on the banner at the top of the page at the BobDavisPodcast.com and look and see at what they have to offer. It is pretty cool when it comes to you motorcycle riders. Ciro3D.com. It's about quality and it's about riding safe and it's about cool. It's about badass. Ciro3D.com. At some point, I'm probably going to talk about tax reform, and I'm going to talk about companies that are repatriating their assets and their manufacturing here in the United States, because it's all about trade protection. Whether you like it or not, President Trump is hell-bent for leather to bring manufacturers back to the U.S. If you work for a company that has a lot of manufacturing overseas, this is something you've got to be prepared for. So if you're considering American manufacturing, please consider and remember Depot Star, American Design Engineering and Manufacturing. They are awesome. DEPOT, Depot Star. Visit their website at depotstar.com. Okay, it is late Friday night, Saturday morning, and this is my time. This is when now I'm starting to relax, and now I could go on for another hour, but this one's gone on long enough. Thanks for listening to the Bob Davis Podcast on iTunes. Right off the page at thebobdavispodcast.com through the streaming service, or actually taking the RSS feed for the Bob Davis Podcast, subscribing right off the page at thebobdavispodcast.com. But we're also on Stitcher.com, TuneIn, BlogTalkRadio.com, Podsearch.com, as well as there's one other one that I was, oh yeah, Google Play. I forgot all about Google Play. So we're in a lot of places. Appreciate the likes and the shares and the favoriting and all that on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram. And thanks for your donations for mobile podcast command at thebobdavispodcast.com. Thanks for listening to podcast 673.